This is the regular city council meeting of Monday, October 26, 2015, 6:00 p.m. Regular council meeting, Monday, October 26, 2015, 6:00 p.m.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to tonight's October 26, 2015 Othello City Council meeting. Would you all please rise for, Eugene Bain's going to lead us in a short prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Dear Heavenly Father, just thank you for this evening. Thank you for the opportunity to make decisions and put back and help out with the community, Lord. Pray that we make good decisions tonight over this budget, Lord. And we thank you for allowing us the opportunity. In your name, amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're going to go to item 1.3, roll call on the agenda. All the council members are present tonight except for Angel Garza, and he is going to be just a couple of minutes late, so could we excuse him for the tardiness, I guess?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion made in second to excuse Angel Garza from the first part of the meeting. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Moving to item 1.4, citizen input. This is a section of the city council meeting where we allow citizens to have up to 5 minutes to address the council with regard to any topic they wish. If you want to address the city council tonight, please raise your hand, and I will recognize you. You can step to the microphone and state your name and address for the record, and you'll have 5 minutes. Is there anyone here who would like to address the Othello City Council tonight? Okay. Let's move to item 2, approval of agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
We have a motion made in second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item number 3, consent agenda. At this time, I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
Make that motion.
We have a motion made in second, and all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Into our current business section of the council meeting, item 4.1, null communications and the LAD irrigation variance. And we have a staff report from Travis Goddard.
Thank you. This is a continuance from the item being heard on the September 28th agenda. And at that time, there was discussion by the board, but there had been no motion. And Councilman Lawless had asked me to work with the applicant to clarify my issues of concern. So I revised submitted a revised agenda memo dated October 26th for tonight's meeting. And it specifically addressed my main concern, and that was if the variance is approved and the above ground infrastructure is permitted by a variance, that when undergrounding of that utility is required, I wanted clarification of who would pay for that. And the applicant in testimony at the last hearing had mentioned that they would pay their fair share of that undergrounding responsibility. And that was repeated in an email which essentially said that that they would pay for that portion, their fair share of that portion. So for example, if Avista and they were required to underground the utilities at that point, that Avista and Noel Communication would share the cost for that infrastructure undergrounding. So my revised staff report recommends approval should it be determined that it's in the interest of the residents to approve the variance itself. Do you have any further questions for me?
Counsel? Guys have hashed it out. You comfortable with this variance?
No.
Still not comfortable?
No.
You want to state something for the record?
Part of what we talked about at the last meeting was the guarantee that the work's being done correctly. There's been a lot of things that's went around ordinances, went around quite a few things. I just want to guarantee that what's going to happen in 2 years or whatever, if that line starts to sag, if something goes wrong with that line, that it's not going to just be left the way that lines and wires are being left now. That was my main concern last week, 2 weeks ago. And that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, I think we have some representatives from Noel. Do you guys want to go ahead and step to the microphone and address those issues for Corey? Thank you.
My name is Nick Guy. I'm the executive director of Noel Communications. I've been in that position for the last 2 years. I can categorically commit that we will take care of that fiber infrastructure for forever, for as long as we're in business. It is critical to us. It is critical to our customers. If we allow our infrastructure to become messy or taken care of, then that's a negative reflection upon us, and that's not something that will stand.
Not too long ago, there was a problem with the wire. I'm not really too sure where it's at, but this gentleman right here is the one who actually pointed it out, that it's already sagging down to 15 feet, so it's already sagging a foot, and that wire is not that old. It hasn't been repaired. It's been left still sagging.
Any cable or any wires that I'm aware of will be taken care of, and perhaps...
We dislocate that one. You're talking about it.
I'll defer to Jim, who's the director of operations.
Right, Jim Schuler, I'm director of operations of NOAA. We did check that span, and it is at 14.6. The minimum is 15.6, so I turned over to our construction guys to go out there and get that height up. So we do know
when
about that.
When is it going to be fixed?
Pardon me?
When is it going to be fixed?
You know, I don't have a schedule back from him when he'll do it. I don't see any reason why we can't get out of here in the next couple of weeks and get it done. In fact, since the subcommittee meeting, we've inspected every span and every attachment point throughout Othello, the city of Othello, and we would like to identify three locations. One is this low span, and two others are splice cases that are in the midst of work. Some of them will be taken care of, hopefully, when the variance is granted, we can finish that job. And we'll be out here, and we'll get that span moved up right away.
I think one of the things that this whole experience has brought to light for me is that we need to maintain a better relationship with the city and to get feedback, you know, about issues that come up with our infrastructure. And I'll personally commit again that we'll repair any issues that are raised, such as this one. And we will commit to doing that within the next 14 days.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions, Council? Okay, it's the staff recommendation to the Council that we approve the requested variance. And I noticed that Travis has an email, so we have it in writing that they will continue to maintain it and not pass the cost on to neighboring properties and public in general. So with that assurance, yes, did you have anything to add to that, Travis?
Sorry to interrupt you, but in case you were going where I think you were going, we did not have an opportunity for public comment at the last hearing, so,
okay.
You might need to do that.
All right, thank you. Then is there any further, is there any public comment for the proposed variance? Yes.
My name is Randy Gubler. I'm the president and general manager of Land Irrigation. been with Ladd Irrigation for 35 years, and we're a part of the community here. We've been here for about 30 years, and we're trying to improve our operations here in Moses, in Othello. We are tied, all three of our stores are tied together and rely on a good internet connection. We rely on that for good customer service. We rely on it to make sure that we have inventory here in Othello that we need. All that purchasing is done out of our Moses Lake store, and so having a viable internet connection is just vital for our company. Like, it's just the requirement that you have something that's reliable and steady and something you can count on every day. So, you know, we're sorry that this has happened the way it's happened, but Ladd Irrigation really could use this fiber down the street to help us to become even a better company than we are already.
Thank you. I will state for the record that at 6:04 p.m. we reconvened the public hearing for this variance. Is there anyone else tonight who would like to speak in favor of this variance from the public? Is there anybody here who is neutral to that would like to speak to the City Council with regard to this variance? Is there anybody here who would like to speak against this variance being granted? Okay, hearing none, we'll close this public hearing at 6:12 p.m. And I will move to the staff recommendation that we approve the requested variance should we be determined that it's in the best interest of the residents of the city of Othello.
I'll make that motion to approve the variance.
I'll second.
We have a motion made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Clarification? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
We have one, six in favor, and Pori voted against. Okay, thank you. So that variance is granted. I believe the mayor will sign that variance. Okay, very good. So let's move on to item 4.2, our TASER agreement, and the police chief, Phil Schenck, has a report.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This should be fairly simple. The reason it's in front of Council is it does require a contract, and you know, as you know, the mayor is the signing authority on all agreements within the city. All of our TASERs within the department are purchased between 2008 and 2012. So we do have some newer ones. They have a five-year life expectancy. And at this point, all of our TASERs that are the current model cannot be repaired. So as they break and die, we have to replace them. So what I put in front of you is an agreement for for the replacement of our TASERs, 17 of them, and to contract with TASER Incorporated for what they call their TASER Assurance Plan. So basically we're paying $3,500 a year to maintain maintenance, and on the fifth year of this agreement, they send us new TASERs and the cycle just keeps going. So this way, we're basically creating an equipment rental central services concept where we pay the same amount every year after this, and we'll always have new TASERs and not have to worry about it. So that's what I have in front of Council. It makes our budgeting much more predictable, and it keeps us from getting in the bind where we have this many TASERs that are now out of date. Any questions?
Council? I've got one question. So is that, even after that 5 years, it will just be the 35, it won't be the 17,000?
The whole purpose of this is that we never come in front of you with the 17,000 request again.
Okay.
It'll be 3,500 a year. We do have that money within the 2015 budget, so we're not overexpending our bottom line. We will be overexpending the small tools line that this comes out of, but we're making up for it in other places.
Spencer, you concur? Okay, council?
And you have it built into your 2016 budget?
The 3,500 would not be necessary until the end of 2016, and I would have the money in there.
Okay.
I hear a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Second. Motion's made in second. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, chief. Okay, at 6:15 PM, I am going to declare an intermission because dinner has been provided for this council budget meeting prepared by Debbie and staff have put this all together for us, so let's proceed to our intermission, and then council will join the tables around down below when we have the rest of our budget meeting. So, yeah, that's good. How long, Debbie? Do you want to? Okay, 20, 30 minutes. Let's, yeah, want to reconvene tonight's meeting at 6:42 PM. Welcome everyone back to our budget session tonight. Before we move into that, Spencer has provided a tremendous amount of work and preparation that went into tonight's session. He's worked with the different departments. We've all, at different ones, have been to committee preliminary budget meetings. And so now, for the first time, we're going to have all of that information compiled for tonight's meeting. But before I go to Spencer, I would like to call on Gina Doro, who's going to give us a brief report from the recent IACC conference in Wenatchee last week.
We recently attended the IACC, and I have to pull up the brochure because I could not remember what the letters stood for. It's the Infrastructure Assistance Coordinating Council Conference that they hold in Wenatchee every year, and it is basically a grant and low-interest loan networking conference. It's your, you go and you can take a lot of different one-hour classes talking about the different programs that they have available for funding infrastructure projects. And this year, I've gone to this before in the past, and I worked with the city for several years, and I always went alone. And this year, we were able to make a team. It was myself and Wade and Sean and Travis all went, and we connected up there with our engineers from Varela. And the first morning there, we had a tech team meeting in which we were able to give a little presentation to, I think, Department of Ecology was there, and the Department of Health, and Rural Development, USDA, and
Commerce.
Department of Commerce. There were several, and so we were able to present a picture of the city and some of the projects that we have upcoming that we would like to do in the future. And they were very interested in quite a few of them, and they were very impressed that we had quite such a polished presentation and everything kind of set and ready. And so hopefully, cross our fingers, we'll be applying for a whole lot of grants and low-interest loans and get some projects done.
Thank you, Gina. I think one of the things that we discovered in that conference is that these are the people who allocate the funds that have already been appropriated within their budgets at the state level and at the federal level. And so rather than at one level where we've gone to our legislators where we would need to obtain some kind of specific legislation or line item in order to get money, these are the people who have already have money appropriated, and we began to meet and find out who these program managers are, what their areas are that they handle, and build a relationship with them. One of those relationships goes back over 15 years. The head of the TIB board, Stephen Gorchester, has been attending the annual Varela dinner for the last 15 years. He's very close personal friends with Mark Varela, and since they happen to be our engineering firm, we found out just what having friends in high places really means. So I think our approach going forward is always going to be the shotgun approach, which is the two-barreled. We will continue to attend this conference and build the relationships with those people, and at the same time, we're still going to continue to have relationships with Dan Newhouse, Mark Schessler, Joe Schmick, and at the moment, Barry Dye. So with that, I would like to turn the balance of the meeting over tonight to Spencer. Maybe you could set the stage about what this meeting is about, what the council can expect, and what decisions will or will not be made tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Tonight is the we're starting to get close to the end of our budget season. After tonight, we have two more meetings where we're going to be looking at the budget, and then on the third meeting, we'll be passing the ordinance that establishes the budget for 2015. And tonight is just going to be an informational night. It's where we're bringing everything together from our many conversations that we've had in our series of council budget committee meetings and meetings that I've been having with Wade and the mayor and with our finance committee. There are a couple of things that I wanted to do tonight. One is to set the stage so you know where is our budget right now. What's the 2016 budget looking like? And then I want to look at some of the handouts that I gave you. I think some of these handouts will be useful as a cheat sheet to walk us through the available funding sources and what the red zone, the wish list items are. So we can look at those pretty easily, and you can mark up those sheets and make your list of priorities, and we can walk through those. But the first thing I want to, then once we're done, we'll have a chance to look at all the red zone items for each one of the departments. And then once we're done, we can just have an open discussion with the whole council. If you wish, we can talk about what do you want, what do you don't want, where are your priorities, and we'll move forward from there. So the first thing that I wanted to do is just look at the budget position. This is a conversation that we've been having with our the last couple of council budget committee meetings, and a conversation that we've been having with our finance committee, just looking at where's the budget and what are we looking at. I want to look at just a couple of budgets. They're big enough so you can see them. Great. I want to look at just a couple of budgets tonight. For this piece of the conversation here, this only applies to these budgets that we're looking at, these funds that we're looking at right now. It doesn't pertain to the water, sewer, or solid waste funds. The revenues from those funds are purely generated from the service revenues. The cost of the service pays for the water activity of the city. Same with the sewer, the solid waste. So I want to look at a couple of funds here. We have the real estate excise tax fund. We have our utility tax fund, our street fund, and our general fund. Our REIT fund is, we'll talk about that a little bit more here in just a sec. That's the fund that can be used for any capital item, really. There's an RCW that governs the usage of those funds, and it gives maybe 15 or 16 different uses of those dollars. And their uses are for things, streets, street lighting systems, sidewalks, new city buildings, new parks, park structures, repair and maintenance of those types of facilities. So really they're capital project type things that the REIT dollars can fund. We make about $40,000 a year in our REIT fund, and right now we're not using any dollars from our REIT fund. And that fund has no minimum fund balance. We have our utility tax fund. This is where we collect the taxes from the sale of electric, gas, cable, the natural gas. Those taxes are brought into this fund And we use, half of those dollars are automatically transferred over to the general fund, then the other half are left there for capital projects, whatever the council wants to spend those dollars on. Ultimately, those are general fund dollars. We have the street fund that has a minimum fund balance. Oh, I should move it down a little bit. So our refund at the end of 2016, we're planning on coming in just shy of $100,000. Utility tax fund, coming in just shy of $430,000, and there's no minimum fund balance there. With our street fund, we have $150,000 minimum fund balance, and we're planning on coming in at about $156,000, so it's we're just right there. With our general fund, we have a $500,000 minimum fund balance that's been established by council. This is kind of the safety net that a bunch of different funds have. This is some of the rainy day. What if things happen that we don't want to happen? This money is there for those events. In our general fund, with our first pass through the budget, actually this is a series of passes through the budget. The more passes we do, the more accurate numbers we get for you. The general fund, right now it looks like it's going to end up with about $114,000, which is shy, obviously, of the $500,000 minimum fund balance. So Wade and the mayor and I have been talking through what are some different options here. And one of the options, or the option that we've come to rest on, is that we're going to need some utility tax dollars to help make up this gap, this $500,000 gap right here. Our utility tax fund, I should already say, this $430,000 right here, this is what's left in the utility tax fund after we take out the general funds portion, after we take out a debt payment. This is after we take out $190,000 transfer to the street fund to help with the 14th Avenue project. So this is what's left in the utility tax fund after those things are already taken out. Those things are already taken into consideration. So if we come down here, ultimately, well, this is, that's it. If we're going to meet our $500,000 minimum fund balance in our general fund, we need to make a transfer of $387,925 from our utility tax fund. That gives us our minimum fund balance for the ending of 2016, and it gives us our new balance in the utility tax fund. Typically, this is the fund that we've been using for our red zone items. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about our ability to fund some red zone items this year and some of the reasons why we have so many fewer dollars than we have in years past. I think one of the most important things here is to be able to label why is this lower over here than it has been in years past. I was jotting down a couple of these things. Let's see. There are a couple of things that we've brought into operation this year that are flowing into next year. One is with our street fund. We're bringing back, we're adding a position to our public works department. I've had a lot of conversations with some different members of the public works department, and one of the things that is the same in each one of the stories that I hear is they've been about the same for the last 30 years, 25 years, I don't know, for a long, long time. Or as far as staffing, they've had the same number, maybe even minus, for the last number of years. And the city certainly hasn't stayed the same. We're growing like crazy. We have two builders that are just going, building homes as fast as they can. And, you know, the community is certainly growing, and it's a very different community than it was 20 years ago. So that's in the street fund. With our building department, we've hired a full-time planner with Travis, which has proven to be a great asset to the city in moving forward and planning for the future growth of our city. We've had additional legal costs in typically, in a typical year, we budget about $50,000 for attorney's fees. This year, we budgeted about $70,000, and we think we're actually going to come in about $115,000-ish. Next year we brought $105,000 over for those costs. And so those are real costs, and we think they're going to be tapering off here pretty soon, but they're something that we need to be ready for.
I want to make note that we're involved in 3 litigations this year, which is why the cost.
We have we're involved with 3 different lawsuits right now that we're hoping we're going to be able to come to a close where we and our city attorney is optimistic about the positive closure of those lawsuits for the city. Something else that I jotted down was with our police department. This is the first time in the 3 years that I've been here that we've had a fully staffed police department. I was talking with one of the council members earlier, and they said it's been a lot more than 3 years. I don't know how long it's been, but it's been a long time. And that's a great thing for the community. It's great that we can have, that we're keeping our police force. That's huge. So here we have fewer dollars that are at our disposal this year. Oh, something else that I wanted to mention we had a decrease in utility tax revenues. The natural gas prices went down quite a bit from 50 cents a therm to 40 cents a therm. So that's a 20% hit to that one revenue stream. That's something that feeds directly into the utility tax fund, and half of that benefits the general fund. So those are real things that are coming up against us. That said, we've established some great things moving forward with the extra public work position, with our building department. We have those legal costs. We have the police that are fully staffed. In years past, we've always had 1 or 2 of those positions empty. And so with the police chief, we worked on, what do we need to fund for position X? We never needed to fully fund that position because we knew that we would start the hiring process in January and we'd bring the person on board by the middle of the year. So for that one position, we only funded June to December, July through December. Here, our police chief has done wonders in working with the officers and really turning things around in the police department. So it's kind of a bittersweet. One, it's great for the community, but it hampers our ability to do some of the other flashy red zone items that we also want to do. So I wanted to make sure that when we're looking at this, we're looking at it through the right lens. We won't be able to do as many red zone items this year as we have in years past, but that's for reasons that are positive for the community. So anyway, this is a conversation that we've been having in a lot of our meetings lately, and the closer we get to the end of the year, the more accurate these numbers are. These are obviously estimates. So with that in mind, I wanted to go through 2 of the handouts that I gave you. One looks like this, and this is a brief description of the different pots of money that we have, the funding sources. I have the different funds coming down the left side. I have the estimated ending 2016, the 2016 estimated ending fund balance. When we do have a minimum fund balance for a fund, I put that on there also. Not every fund has a minimum fund balance. Those are the ones that do. So when we take our estimated ending fund balance, take away our minimum fund balance, that gives us our available funds for the year to work with. One other thing that I wanted to mention briefly with our real estate excise tax fund, here we have $97,000 here. This is money that we haven't, that we're not using this year. And that was, and I budgeted, I planned the budget with that in mind. That was from a conversation that we had during a council meeting. But if we want, we have, these dollars can only be used for capital projects, streets, buildings, those kinds of things that I mentioned earlier. In our utility tax fund, one of the expenses that's coming out of the figure before we get to this bottom figure here is $190,000 transfer to the street fund, and that's to help for the First and 14th Avenue projects that are holdovers from last year. If we want, we can use some REIT dollars to help make up, to help fund some of those projects in the street fund, which means the utility tax fund wouldn't have to send as much money over to the street fund. Does that make sense? So there's a way that we can use our real estate excise tax money towards street projects in lieu of using utility tax dollars towards our street projects. So that's something to keep in mind. I've been told that we want to leave this balance grow for the next couple of years, and that's great. If that's what you want to do, then that's what we'll do. But there is that option, and I want to make sure that you're aware of that option because it's out there. So that's the first page. It shows the available dollars that we have. Then the second page is a list of the red zone items for the year. There are two different columns here. I broke up the red zone items into the different funds that they pertain to. There are two different columns here. The red letters are for discussion, and the black are already funded. So you can see we have a number of different things on the black side that we're already moving forward with our comprehensive plan. We have a $24,000 grant. We have our skate park project that we're looking at in the new year that actually we were planning on doing this year, but estimates came over. It's going to cost more than our engineer estimates initially indicated. So our plan is to move that into next year. The extra position for Public Works, I put that down there. We have a number of water things that we're doing, and then we have our solid waste down there also. With the police department, I said see police handout. Right behind this handout, there's another one that has the police department red zone items. And really, I just wanted you to have these documents, because you can easily make some notes on them. You can see the available funding sources. You can do some math. If you don't have a pen or a pencil, I can scrounge one up for you. But you can easily prioritize here. It's obvious that we're not going to be able to fund all the red zone items that we want. No community can ever get all of the things they want to do in a given year. I was asked a couple of weeks ago, well, then why should we even present these red zone items? Well, these are still important for the community, and if we can't fund something during this budget, these next couple of council meetings, these next couple of nights, as we're going into the new year, May, June, maybe something will change, and then we can come back to this list. And we can look at these things and say, oh my gosh, you know, our utility tax dollars came in higher than anticipated. Or this other expense that we thought we were going to have, we're not going to have now. So we have some extra money there. That's what we did with our additional bathroom in Lions Park. We're able to add that additional ADA bathroom in Lions Park, much like the one in Kiwanis Park. So with that in mind, these are still important things, and we can... what we can't fund right away, we can look at during the year, and we can move forward with that. With that in mind, we're going to move into the next section of the night, where we're looking at some of the red zone items. The very first section that you'll see in board docs is for the administration piece of the budget. This is the city hall, the planning building, some of those items. Then we'll go through the police department, public works, parks, and then we'll have open discussion, and we can talk about what you want to talk about for the next however long you want to talk about it. These are very truncated versions of the budget. When we looked at the budget in our council budget committee meetings, we looked at every single line item, and so we don't need to do that again tonight. That would take a really long time. and we've already reviewed that information. Tonight, I just wanted to look through the red zone items, and we have, I believe, just three up in the general fund. You can look on your cheat sheet here. So the first item here, we normally budget $12,000 a year for building repair and maintenance, and we've included that this year in our building repair and maintenance line. The request was posed that we increase that up to $20,000. We just paid off for building just this year. We made our final debt payment for the City Hall building, and like any other building, it's going to be showing its wear, and this is a red zone item here requesting that we increase our building repair and maintenance line. That may not be for use this year, but if we have a few different years where we sock $8,000 away, pretty soon we'll have something that would be able to replace carpets or windows or lighting, whatever the building might need, and then we can tap those dollars that we've already set aside, and it won't be such a hit a few years down the road. So that's that item. Then the other two items were in the IT arena. The first one's $3,000 for a new router, and the second one is a new phone system for $25,000. This is something that Stan has been working pretty hard on for the last, for a while. Okay, for a while. Stan is looking at our system and looking at ways to simplify our system so we can run our phone system cheaper moving forward.
If you take a look at our phone system, you're going to look at each individual phone, you'll find well over half of them, you can't see the display because that lines in it. We replaced those bad phones just 3-4 years ago. The company did that for us because they were failing. In 1982, a patent was filed for color underneath. By 1990, 26 years ago, it was common that you could have color ID on the phones. We do not have color ID in City Hall, including police dispatch. We have two police dispatch stations, one of which, the telephone, is pretty much non-functioning. They can answer a call, they can put it on hold, but they can't pick it back up from being on hold. And that's a phone system thing. It isn't a telephone thing, it's the box upstairs. And we have some phones that won't pick up the voicemail. It is old, it's not working properly. And as far as the savings portion of it goes, I put down here $25,000 plus $3,000 for the router. The router is integral to the phone system because we need to establish a service to divide the data from the phone in the router procedure. We have that within the switches within the building that I replaced last year, but we need that also in the router, and we need to increase the capacity. We have 200 through Saddle Mountain has 200 megabits of fiber coming in, which is great. It's plenty. We don't need more than that, but we need to divide that. We need to allocate it within the router. And then the telephone system, our telephone bill with CenturyLink is pretty high. I can save by switching voice over IP, the digital phone over the analog, will save us at least $1,500 per month. I'm thinking what's going to be more like $1,800, like conservatively say we will save $1,500 a month. So that's $18,000 of what I'm asking for this year. But we definitely need it just for the proper functionality. We'll add an additional caller ID, we have conference bridges, we'll have all kinds of things that just kind of come standard with the digital system. And I can probably come in under that budget when it comes right down to it. That includes public works, it includes police department, city hall, includes schools.
Will these phone systems be integrated with computers?
To some degree, yes. We can have a soft phone on the computer as well if we choose to. We can, there's all kinds of things you can do. You can, your voicemail can go to email, which I recommend against for public records requests. But, you know, we'll have an up-to-date, total state-of-the-art system.
Well, they have systems out now where you can actually bring up a phone list on your computer and see if that person's available.
Yes, the telephone list that I'm going to recommend, you will be able to see on the phone set itself or the ones you most call. Like we have push button for you to tell if Wade is on the phone or whatever. You can put it with a very quick, you know, you can send it to do not disturb, send voicemail, all those commands. And yes, you can do all of that
So if the system was purchased, when would you plan to have it in service?
I actually already have a good portion of the design in place. It mostly is purchasing the telephone units themselves and programming. The programming, basic phone that is up to standard where we are now, I can have that done probably in a week's time, but not even much. But within a couple of months, we should be fully functional. Get it sooner.
Because what I'm looking at, and if it could save up to $1,500 a month, I know we pay a lot in phone services. I see the bill every month when we go through it. And if it's going to make that much, we could actually go back and lower what we're currently in the general fund, what we've already got applied for, because we'll be saving it on this end, and it will make that figure a little bit lower there.
And that's
easier to justify. Yes.
Then that impact would be quite a bit less.
And that's why I asked how quick this, you know, if it's not going to be in service for 6 months down the road, 7 months down the road. And I know it definitely needs to be done. I tried to call Phil one day, and after the third attempt, and they finally had to call me back on my phone in order to speak to him.
Well, an 18-month ROI is pretty damn good.
That's good.
Yeah.
So should we move forward? We can put a star next to some of these items and then come back to those red zone items that you have more questions with.
Yeah, because that one I'd like to see what we're currently budgeting already in our phone system.
Okay.
To see what we could possibly save there or what we could possibly reduce that one to make up for.
Okay.
So you have to have the router also to make this work. So
without the router, we really... Potentially, we don't have that many concurrent calls, usually. But if we had heavy call volume, everybody would walk, you know, and that's no good. But this is over. You have to separate, you have to isolate the digital phone traffic from the data traffic.
We had just a few other items in the general fund before we got to the police department. There's been a request to put some money aside, $32,000, for a new generator for the fire department, and also increase the reserve fund by $50,000 to be able to purchase the new fire truck. Right now, at the end of this year, we have just over $190,000, and eventually that's something that we'll need to be able to purchase coming down in the future. And then the last one is for a grant writer. We only have $15,000 here in this category, and we're kind of going back and forth on what's the appropriate dollar amount here. We're looking at maybe joining with Varela, joining forces, so we'd pay half and they'd pay half. We're looking at maybe joining forces with some other governmental agencies that would also benefit from having a grant writer, so we can have a share those costs across the board, and we can all benefit from that position. This is something that we're still looking at. And we'll be able to bring more to you as throughout the next year.
Another option we may look at also after Roman's comments was a directed contract with Grant Wider that does some of those. We want to get a civic center as your grant out there for that, and we'll have a grant writer move forward looking for a grant for that. Skate park, name of what they're. yeah, that project, in other words, so we got to look into that as well. So that, that may be another option for this, sort of hiring a full-time grant writer. Although after going to this conference, as Gina said, grant writers hardly pay for him herself in the first year from the rapid.
Well, we talked about a little bit of discussion about the grant writer situation, and I really think that maybe paying by project at first would be a way to go, and then once they start bringing in money and are getting grants and basically paying for their position, then possibly moving into a full-time position. But until we see that they're making headway, I would think. By project or
something. So we'll back to council before too long. We'll plan.
And with those grants, when Travis came back from that meeting, he was talking to me about one of the people that he talked to, and they were talking about grants that they offer communities like ours to purchase police vehicles, to purchase fire trucks, those kinds of things. Are, yeah, 80% of those items, which is huge. If we were able to get a grant that funded 80% of a squad car, that's a $5,000 squad car for us. That's great. Or if we can get somebody to pay for 80% of a fire truck, that's huge. You know, that's great. And so that piece also.
What's it take approximately to write a grant in funding?
It just depends.
It depends on the application, how complicated it is.
The other part of the grant, unfortunately, also is the administration of the grant. Someone's grabbed out, Travis or especially the administrator, but some of them are pretty darn complicated, and the requirements for reporting, filling out forms. There was one session in June I went to that made the eyes roll back in my head, and then because all the stuff that they need to get through half of what the requirements were.
And pretty much if you get into federal funds, we're looking at some serious administration.
Especially with federal.
You pretty much have somebody constantly during that, so I don't know that grant.
So yeah, that's what would be one reason for a full time. Grant writer slash administrator. Yeah, so we will be investigating this a little bit further.
And the other piece is knowing what's out there.
That's
it. Someone knows
so how are we currently covering our engineering costs for grant writing today?
This year, picks that up. Normally, engineering firm, I think it's going for us. They roll that in for costs as engineering services and stuff like that. We actually approached them and said, hey, what if we split this, have full time grant writer. They were more than able to still see what they say about that.
Okay. Should we move on to the police department? I believe your section is next. Police. Okay. Okay.
So last year, council was very generous. It was very pleased with everything they asked for us. I realize that I'm not, cannot be the commissioner. I want to show you some of what we've done with that. One of the things that I noticed is that I'm very data driven. So I believe what this county has done in our government climate income. When the state puts out its uniform crime report, basically one of the things it shows us is the index crime, which is crimes that are put together to build our crime rate per 1,000 crimes or 1,000 population. When I saw the uniform crime report this year, what the number that it assigned to a fellow was shot was 150. I think it was 151, something like that, crimes per 1,000. So 151 people in 1,000 population are going to be victimized with some index crime. Now, take the next step. I'm thinking, okay, maybe that's just a fluid number just 1 year. So I went back 3 years and I saw that we're actually going down this year. Now, which is a good thing, nationwide crime is going down about 5% a year. For the last few years. Now, I don't think 5% a year is good enough. I think we need to look at something more than that. So I started looking at the top three crimes that affect our crime rate. We have three crimes that really stand out. One of them is vandalism. In this case, it's called criminal mischief. And that is the highest grant that we have. The next after that is, I believe, the Gym of Death, and the next after that is Salts. The Salts are very difficult for us to lower, but the other two, when it comes to just general theft and most especially vandalism, they're very officer presence affected. So if we, data-driven approach to crime and traffic safety, look at some of those and the crime goes down. So what I wanted to show you is this top one, this first one here is malicious mischief in our community. So we noticed that there was a spike starting in April and then in July, but the spike in May-June is a huge contribution to our crime rate. This is addressing our first topic, which is overtime. We budgeted $42,000 this year for overtime. We will spend about $60,000. I realize that's a lot of money. Other cities are spending significantly more than that. My goal is to spend less than that. Can you show the next one? With this, with addressing that spike, we're now spending substantially below last year. And this is our number one point. We're seeing less than a degree of theft, assaults. We're not attacking much at all, but we're seeing that trend go too. So with this, my goal is to put it at 151 crimes per 1,000. And to put it in perspective, Moses Lake was, I think, 137. Warden, I believe, was under 100, not 70. The crime rate for Adams County is about 69, 70 crimes per 1,000. So we're double the county's crime rate. That's unacceptable. So with our staffing levels that we have, with our schedules that we have, the point is we're putting officers where they need to be, when they need to be. And overtime is our way of doing that. So if an officer calls in sick and I've got a three-man crew or a two-man crew, we pay overtime to go ahead and make sure we've got somebody in there. Often we'll shift people around, we'll move a swing shift officer to day shift or a swing shift officer into the evening. We do that to try to keep costs down, but it's not always possible. The next piece of that is you want to send them to training. Often it's not during their normal shift, so we end up paying some overtime for that. So in this case, the request was $18,000 in overtime. And that's in addition to the $42,000 that we budgeted this year. So that's our first item. Any questions on that? Okay, I'll move on to the next one. The next one down is travel for training, under criminal justice and training. And I won't talk on this one yet. We're requesting $7,500 for travel. So to put that in perspective, what I'm trying to accomplish is I want a trainer for all of the main disciplines in our department. So defensive tactics, firearms, emergency vehicle operations, each of those types of things are a discipline, and I want to have it as an in-house trainer on each of those. Just like you saw with the active shooter training that we did at our sports response summer, that was done in-house, so that saved us a lot of overtime of sending people away from that kind of training. We were able to actually share that with Woodsville, Adams County, and Warden PDs. So we're trying to build up that cadre of trainers so we can train in-house and keep our costs down. If I send an officer to Seattle for a week, it generally costs us $100 a night for the hotel and another $50 a day for meals. So by the time that week is done, that's $7,000 into that option of training. This $7,500 is an increase for our existing, and that's basically for meals and lodging. The next line below that is registration costs. A lot of the training that we're going to now requires that we pay a registration fee. If you notice the sheet that Spencer indicated was attached to the back of the three-page sheet that they did actually put these in priority for us. But I'm going to go down to the budget in the way it is. The training miscellaneous, which is $5,000 increase, is our lowest priority. Go back up, overtime was actually our third priority. The $7,500 in training travel is fifth priority. So to go down, any questions so far? No. Go down to the next line. I didn't actually list it here. I believe the mayor can speak to this. It's a $10,000 proposed increase to the pet rescue contract. We're currently paying the $15,000 a year. This would be an increase to their contracts. They do have a lot more of that now than they did a year ago. So that's the pet rescue. Now we go down into what's down in the capital items for what used to be the main resident items for us. We have listed on the one sheet $91,000 for the two vehicles. I'm going to propose against the council one vehicle. And this time I'm going to argue a little stronger that we stick with one vehicle. Last year we did, this year in 2015, we really did need the two vehicles. Next year, don't believe we need the two vehicles. I think we can easily divide with one vehicle. The reason for that is one of the vehicles that's due to be replaced is the school resource officer's car. It's a low priority car, wear and tear. Realistically, it's in working in schools for 5 more years. The governor repairs, he's not doing high speed pursuits in it, and it's not running the laps around the city all night long. So I think that it would be prudent to not replace that car this year. Now, the next year, we're going to be able to replace that car again, and so we're just pushing it up. Another year where we have three cars the next year. That is not the case again, because next year my car is going to be replaced. My car only has 45,000 miles on it. I don't think we need to be replacing a car by then. I have 60,000. But it's an admin car. I rarely get in pursuits with it. I didn't think I want to pursue with it. And I think we've actually been better than the Crown Vic that was in front of me. The Crown Vic in front of me is the one car I'm recommending to replace this year. So realistically, we're not pushing off the problem that creates buying for us next year for the next. So we don't believe we need the full 91,000, but I do think that we just buy the one car at about 45,000. So the item of that is a lot more complicated, and that's the central services 28,000. And that started closer to 80,000, then we got it down to 60-some thousand, and now we got it down to 28,000. What that is our computer systems in our building are not on any kind of replacement schedule. So we have some computers that are quite old, we have some computers that are very wrong. We have no plans for when they die to replace them. So again, just like the major things that are brought up in the council tonight, we may come a time and we say, hey, we've got a problem, how about computers, we have to replace them all. What I want to get into is a system that we're actually having on a replacement schedule. We say that it's at a 4-year end of life. At the 4th year, we replace them, and we keep doing that. I believe in my experience is if we do that, we actually reduce some of the family work because it's not having to replace small parts, waste of time doing that. But it also will get to a point where we have a stable, predictable budget. We're asking for about the same amount every year instead of large sums every office. So every seller now, what we're doing right now is just 28,000 divided into that. But what this would do this year, this coming year, is we currently have 5 computers in our cars that are working. That's those Panasonic notebooks that some of you have seen. We're hot swapping those, so they are running greater than 65 days a year, 24 hours a day. They're almost always in the police car. With that, we're getting both out, banged up. They're not made to be coming in and out of the car all the time. my goal, what this $28,000 would do, would put a computer in every car, make it stay in the car, so it's not just banged up something like that. Those computers are very expensive, they're about $3,000 a piece. Then the desktop computers that most of us use are about $500-$600, so those are very small percentage of this. In the end, we end up with a computer that shows those which computers can be used plus when. The fact that our police cars rotate every 8 years, our plan is, and everything, put this $45,500 in the last 2 cars. When we buy a police car, we simply outfit it with a new computer, new electronics, and everything we need. We're not moving that 8 years later to the next car. Now, I know that I can't make a computer last 8 years, so when we get to the major makers, we plan on fixing that computer halfway through the car lifecycle of 4 years. So these are topics that we're going to have to address, and we can't address it this year. Maybe we could do a portion of that. So again, that's in front of council for your consideration. And then the $15,000, that's my highest priority for one police. I'm sorry. That is actually the second place, which is our fourth priority. So our first priority is the police vehicle. The second priority is the next one below it, and that's the $15,000. What that does is that promotes a fourth sergeant. So you can set up a sheet up for the last few years. So as I said, this is our second highest priority. This is what our organizational structure looks like in a department account. So if you notice, in the bottom left-hand corner, you'll see the three yellow blocks for sergeant, sergeant, and sergeant. Under each of those is two officers, so in essence, they have a squad of themselves and three staff of two class members. On the fourth column over, you'll see that there's three officers without a sergeant above them. So all of those sergeant officers are answering to Josh Silver. If these were being day shift, that means swing shift and night shift are not covered with the sergeant in that rotation. If he's on swing shift, that means day shift and grade guard. I purposely include all of the sergeants off of grade guard because I think that they're spent on day shift and swing shift for supervision. But what my proposal does is it doesn't add an additional FTE. It promotes one of our officers, we do competitive testing. We promote one officer to sergeant, which is an increase in pay and benefits of about $15,000. So at that point, I would have two day shift sergeants and two swing shift sergeants. They're not working at the same time, they're department. Remember this new schedule is kind of, it's hard to follow. It's 5 days on, 4 days off, 5 days on, 4 days off, 5 days on, 5 days on. So that opposite 4 days, and that opposite 5 days is when that other squad B or squad 2 will be working. So that's my second highest priority. So I did have, so any questions on these? Now, just the top priority was the vehicle, second priority is the sergeant promotion, down to the overtime. And with the overtime, if that's something we want to find mid-year, and if we look at, we would know mid-year whether we're going to be in trouble or not. If you don't have any options on administrative leave, if you don't have any options on sick leave or injuries, then I think that our overtime is likely to come down or stay down this year. We're going to be about $60, so this puts us at where we are this year. So then the final thing, and it's, I don't know where it fits and what you've been provided here, but it's the crime prevention budget, which would require a general fund transfer to the fully funded. And what that covers is the police stores, the police reserves, and the national NIL. We currently have a 2010 explorer with another five that have applications in. We're asking for $6,700 in total funds for that. We believe that we'll have it funded, that we'll have some year-end money from this year utility company is getting $5 next year. Let's find that primarily is the $100 early release on total vehicles. We collected $4,400 so far this year. That has gone to pay up to the budget that you approved 3 meetings ago for the police force. And the final thing here was the $5,000 for the reserves, another $1,000 for National Night Out. We did an echo to block parties this year with the new department for me. I would like, if possible, to find out the sum.
These items?
Oh, yeah.
Number six.
Yes.
Six and seven.
So six and five. The police explorers are you know, priorities, $4,000, and the reserves, $4,200. And actually, I think I scratched the request for the National Night Out portion for planning on that because we can do the donations and some of that would be. We do have three applicants for the police reserves. Two of them are successfully so far going through the background process. But once we get there, what this costs fund, it costs us, I believe, about $500 to send them to the academy. That we're going to have to uniform and equip them. Obviously, we're not including $600 or $700 jump suits because we don't know how long they're going to stay. So, that's our budget. Any questions?
Council.
Or request?
Okay, thank you, Chief.
Okay, we'll move on. The next item is with Terry with Public Works. I can close this. So Terry was going to review the street, water, sewer, and solid waste funds. And then we'll end up with Molly. Yeah. Then we'll end up with Molly for the parks. Do you want to start with this or start with...
You've got a couple items. Maintenance says for $71,000, and you see seasonal for $121,000. A little explanation there. On the $71,000 there, we're looking at a fourth guy. I put the fourth guy in the department to do the expansion of the subdivision, roads, streets, water. When I came in the past year, we had 8 people in the department. We were down to 5 this year. We had 1 retired. We had 1 and 2 budget cuts a couple years ago. We had in place, and then we had 1 equipment work for the health department. So currently, we'd like to get on this budget. We're going to go back to 4-8 people on the staff. And we're asking council to take a look at the fourth individual to add to the staff for next year. On the seasonal side, here, we're looking at 4 individuals. And there's a reason for the 4 individuals that we're asking for here. They're set up to work 8 months. Now, we've got DOC, and these are some of the issues that we have with our DOC workers currently. Today, you know, we got missing work days, we got no call, no shows, 21 days of no shows for a year. Lack of communication from the ridge, so we don't know when they're coming, when they're going, and they just don't show up, and we have to track them. They arrive late, leave early. Some of the guards right now are on 8 hours, some are on 10 hours, so that depends on whether the guy quits up at 1 and takes the crew back, or he stays till 3. We found that out just here last week on Friday. Have 8-hour workers, 10-hour workers. The tasks that we give aren't always done. There's a lot of standing around, a lot of crew. The guard actually supervises the crew. Crew shortages, sometimes we only have 3 to 5 individuals that show up. We're supposed to have 10. They guaranteed us early this spring, when Wade and I talked, they guaranteed us in 2 months we'd have a consistent 10 people. I haven't seen it yet. If the crew gets into trouble out there, and they find something in the park, they'll haul the whole crew in and lock them down for what they found contraband in the park. This is what we deal with every day. The concerns that the city has with going forward in the future is the new LNI standards and requirements. All documentation for the new contract can be done by city staff. City must provide supervision for the crew. The guard will just be the chauffeur. He won't be any supervision whatsoever. City is paid the LNI premiums. Estimated out at a given dollar amount there for a total estimated of $6,000 for crew. The city would pay general liability for the year on the crew. All job duties and descriptions to be given to LNI 2 days prior to works. Starting, given LNI time to review and inspect. Now, LNI is asking that one crew member from my crew become the hazardous assessment, job assessment, for every job that the city is going to pull off for the crew. So that takes one guy completely out of my crew and he becomes basically what that guard was. But he's got to send the paperwork in, it's got to be approved for work to be done. He also has to do the safety training for the whole crew, and the crew rolls over every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, they roll the crew into a new crew, so you spend a whole day training them on just about every piece of equipment that they're going to be using the next 2 weeks. If somebody falls out on the crew, and then the new guy comes in, you have to take him aside and have to train him as well. And you have documentation that goes to the same. Wages and benefits for one of my guys, $79,707. The DOC contract was $20,000. That would not reach DOC member, that's based on 10 DOC and 6,000. Liability insurance for the workers there is 25 street. So the total cost of the city is $131,749. Seasonal help. We're asking to hire 4 seasonal help for the parks. Basically work March through October for 8 months. These seasonal workers would make $12 an hour. 4 staff members, 8 months, $66,000. Benefits for 4, $54,000, liability insurance, and then we eliminate the overtime. Currently, right now, the overtime that we have for our ball tournaments and things like that, they have real fast. Most of the guys that work them, they don't mind working them, but they don't get any time, especially with ball games and the little league tournaments and things like that. So, during the week, we prep all the fields, and then we ask for 2 guys to work in. Drain fields, water fields, chopping lines, setting. This is the cost at the bottom of $29,503 for that seasonal workers. Some of the benefits, they're scheduled through the weekend. We ran these before when the state shut the offsite crew down, and we had a reduction in benefits. There was 2 trucks going, when 2 people went, and they were back and forth across town, in the parks, out of the parks. You didn't know when they were coming and going, and I believe that had a lot to do with the reduction of that. They were in there in the restrooms, cleaning the restrooms, checking for toilet paper, and things like that. So we didn't have fires there, we didn't have people repeating. And for that year, it was down. The electrical issues that we have when people overload the circuits, they can reset them, we'll know what's going on there. Garbage cans will be empty in the wash. I believe here a couple years ago, council member, there were some dirty tables out there, and nobody likes to sit in dirty tables, so we ended up cleaning them up. They worked out really good at doing all of this. We have reduction in call outs for overtime for union employees. These staff people would actually work the tournaments because they're in the park. We only need 2, and the other 2 that I worked before actually were out doing the other restrooms in the parks and things like that. Well, 2 of them were. And this is our estimated savings down here at a current rate on overtime for union employees, $37 an hour. Steven House 12, there's an approximate saving of 5,100 overtime there. Our call-outs for overtime for union guys, approximately $400. See what's happened 25 years ago. 25 years ago, there were 6 maintenance workers in the department. City population was 4,638. Today's maintenance staff is currently fully funded to 8 individuals right now. The reason that our says 7, we actually have 8 because we have come along through the year following up with enough funding for what we had when somebody retired in March. Correct me if I'm wrong. We had somebody retired in March, Jack Pepper retired in March, and we come down this far in the year to get enough money saved up that we can fill the department with the funds that we haven't spent on payroll. So we have the ability right now to fund 8 people to fill the other 3 slots that we're missing to be full to a full staff meeting. City population today is 76. We have some.
With the salary and the staffing side, we did fill an extra person in the budget for 2016. Then there's another request for an additional person on top of that. So one of those people is funded, and the other one is the one on the
level. Terry, for a total of 9?
Yes. Would that be 9 total staff?
Yes. Okay, we're good, Spencer. Council, any? I'm sorry.
Currently, where are we funding the corrections people from? You're doing that through the street fund? So really, it's not a red zone item. It's a push. I mean, you get 4 people, you know, seasonal help that work full time for public works. You're gonna not need the corrections people, and it looks like a cost savings, right?
Spencer, offhand, do you know what the 2015 budget was for Department of Corrections?
I don't know for the 2015. Budget.
What does it fall under in the budget?
The red zone item, that's on the
yeah, you've added it there, but where was it previously being budgeted at?
It's in the street fund.
I think it was 50,000, wasn't it? We're looking at that this morning.
Yeah, currently, if we heard the seasonal. I think that's what Terry's saying, is if we hired a seasonal, we're actually going to save money as opposed to having an EOC here because of all the extra revenue.
Correct, but it's not in addition to what...
No.
I mean, we're not going to go out and spend that money right now. We're going to do that in 2016, and there's going to be a line item removed from the budget. Or they're going to cancel each other.
Well, it's actually lower, but it's going to be just as much because we're going to hire... one of our personnel to be with them because that's what they're requiring.
But we're not talking about if we hire the seasonal workers, you don't have to have anybody with them.
No.
That's what.
But the cost is what I'm saying. The cost is about the same.
Yeah.
The definite cost.
Yeah.
Is. It's about the same. We're not going to be using one of our guys to do it. So that costs.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an additional. Take away 7,977, that's the difference in the cost right here.
So on this page right here, you've got a seasonal staff for 78,000. So that is minus the Department of Corrections figure right there then.
Also, we had talked about during our meeting this is a plus just because if you get these seasonal guys, you know, and they happen to stick around, you know, year by year as our staff is retiring, the ones from public works, you know, if these guys happen to be good workers, you know, we can use them to kind of jump in as a full-time position and they're going to know the job. So that's a win-win situation there. Yeah, they're already trained.
Job retirement.
That I looked at down the road, and that's, council wants to establish a permanent exit department down the road. So if we put these greens people on, and we work these groups through the season, they'll have all the knowledge of the parks, and how the adventure ran, bases, and how they pan out, and so they can move and slide right into that. Molly won't have to have a whole lot of issues with it. They'll know how to handle that. So if it works, if you're looking forward, looking towards the future, it works out.
I'm totally in favor of getting rid of the corrections people and replacing them with seasonal people. I'm very much in favor of that.
The reason for the 8 months is when we come out of winter, normally things kind of froze, muddy up around February. So we get a month to actually work the fields and prepare them for April 1. So that's when we open them up April 1. And then when we get down to the end, get down in October, we start getting the bases, put the caps in, and put everything to bed there so the spring can be taken care of.
Yeah, but there's plenty of other things they can do in the park besides just the baseball stuff, like tree trimming and leaf raking and whatever.
Would these be 40-hour-a-week employees on a seasonal basis? How do we get around certain things like retirement and other
contracted?
Spencer, you want to answer that?
The benefits packages, which add another 30%.
This includes the assistance costs.
They'd be completely eligible for everything when they're employed.
This costs.
Or 28.
So that covers.
Yeah, I think if you had it on there for, if you go to the next slide, if you had it on there because it was the salaries, and then underneath you had the benefits for the 8 months.
I don't know the rules and regulations on it, but you can't hire them like at 35 hours a week and get around some of these benefits?
I think it's even less than that because you have an employee that's been scanning the documents that has to stay under so many from the benefits.
Just a suggestion, you can contract labor people through Marjon at a rate, a fixed rate, and they take care of everything. And if you wanted four people at your staffed at your facility, they would do that. And they would be responsible for making sure four people showed up every single day.
Yeah, and that's not a bad idea.
And they provide training, and if you have certain things within your work that you have to be trained on, they'll provide that.
But I think if you're going to pay them the same wages for whatever they're going to charge you to run that crew, you can actually maybe pay for their insurance in the long run. Well, for the year, because they're not going to do it for free. You know what I mean? So if we're paying $12 and they're going to pay $12, they charge you like $1, $2 an hour. So that's going to go into the budget. So maybe why not pay insurance? We talked about also in the meeting, we can bring these guys back because we're offering a decent rate.
I'm offering a suggestion based on information I know about, that you can contract labor people for periods of time through agencies that are available in Othello. That's all I'm saying. You guys can work that out in the committee on what you want to do, but I'm totally in favor of this, getting four seasonal people. And
I'm with you. We can do that. One thing, guys, being in the field of hiring a lot of guys in the trucking and also to the development, a lot of guys are looking for insurance. That's the number one thing. So if we offer that, we're going to get some good help.
Well, Obama's
if not, it's going to be churning all the time.
Obama's got that. Insurance is there. The insurance is there. I mean, they don't need somebody to provide that for them. So,
but are we obligated if we hire them for 8 months to continue, like if we're paying medical insurance on them to continue to pay it for the other two. I know there's an issue I asked Spencer to check on with the labor and, I mean, not labor and industries, employment security, that we might be on the hook if we employ them for 8 months and then they go on unemployment. Since we do not, as the city does not pay into employment insurance agency for coverage, that we are on the hook though for any unemployment claims that they do make.
No, not yet. No. I called them a number of times.
Okay. Well, you'll get it worked out. You'll find the best way for the city to deal with this. But yeah, that's a great idea. Seasonal people rather than, you know, convicts. Correctional people.
A lot more done anyway.
Yeah, especially the way that the state's pushing their agenda on that too.
There's one additional position funded for next year, already in the budget, already in the numbers that we've been looking at.
The budget set up right now. And when my secretary says we're in the highly eight position, it's something that's within the budget for next year. What we're looking at, what the additional position in the top is a ninth position down the road. Just to put in context, the ideal situation we feel based on the population and what the workflow is to have the nine positions and the four seasonal. I don't know if we can afford that this year, but that would be ideal if we could do it. Maybe, you know, for 2017, we can't do it 2016. We're down the road for looking to see if we have money out of, you know, in 2016. That's the ideal position. You know, one of the benefits that's not up there, talked about in committee, was, you know, we pay Terry to be a supervisor, and not to run around and check on, you know, Angel's project, First Avenue project, Fields project. We don't really pay him to do that per se, but that's what he ends up spending a lot of his time doing. Right. It's good he's got experience and that's what he's looking for, but it's bad and then he can't really work on stuff that we need him to be doing, like the supervision piece. He's doing it. He's spending, you know, if you look at his timesheet, he's working about half a minute as hard as most of the other people on his staff. But that's not really what we're paying him to do per se. So this kind of staffing will allow him to back off from that and spend his time on perhaps even help him with grant writing, help with other projects that we should be doing. And so that's not mentioned. I just want to make sure that was understood by all.
Terry, these seasonal workers, not only besides the parks, would they be working with you on public works projects, possibly with water, sewer?
We're going to kind of give them a general idea of a lot of stuff.
I'm looking at using our water and sewer. Budgets are a little more flexible than our general fund budget. So if there's possibly a portion that we could use out of those to help fund these too. If they're going to be used in those departments also.
That is one of the benefits to going to the seasonal workers is we can use them in other places. It's kind of limited to where you can put them because you can't really take guys that can't even hardly run the rakes, so put them in and working on the water lines. And especially at this time, when you've got the supervisors basically guard, we can't stick them in and because either of them will easily make them. So the benefit would be that you can take these guys, cross train them, and use them everywhere.
So we can use part of those budgets to help fund this too, instead of all out at the general.
Okay.
That's what I'm looking at.
Well, here I just found the little worksheet that I put together that talks about the staffing for the public works department. So we have the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then we have, so our eighth position is this position here. This is bringing back a lost position. And then the position 9 is the red zone item. This is the red these items are all included, currently included in the 2016 budget. So, these are already there.
Now, Justin Barker's back. He's a rehire, and you haven't filled the vacant position, which was Jack Pepper.
And the old position was a position that somebody left?
Yeah, we put it out there a couple of years ago.
And it just never got refilled. So you consider that he's operating with six people, which is the same as they've been operating for the last, you know, 25 to 30 years. At half, you know, starting out with six people at what? About 4,500 population, and we've doubled that, and they're still operating with six people. So it's become a matter of they're running around putting out fires as opposed to being able to do their maintenance jobs. And I think that it's high time that we make sure that they've got a fully staffed public works so they can bring out fires and be able to get some of the actual maintenance done.
You got like three or four employees with 20 years experience too.
Yeah, we need those positions filled so they can start running before those people leave.
So just on this last slide right here, it just kind of outlines some of the overtime savings that we've got here through food spending. The last one here, the last little phrase, you're not getting a regular system complaints received about garbage cans overflowing through the three shelters, both things of that. That's priceless, because when you don't have to answer the phone, you get a lot of complaints, and you put people on to take care of that, you can't put a price on it. People are happy. So it makes a big difference. And that 1 year was a huge difference when we had four. We made a big difference.
So you're going to go on to your next ones?
So that's the street. The next one is the water. And we just had two red zone items in the water to discuss. We have the well 6, repair and maintenance, and the water line improvements along with that we do along with other street projects.
So the water fund has a red zone item of $500,000 for well 6 repair and maintenance. Now we've come to council and we did work on 6, and we worked on the lower half, and we made the lower half as efficient as we can get with the money that was spent. So now that the lower half is efficient, the upper half is inefficient. 900 horse motor, 2400 volt, cross the line start, very hard start, no easy ramp up or ramp down. And we went out and we told council that we could come back and we get a number, we put some things together to see if we could get that big horse over there down to where we could actually electricity savings and everything would come down and we could run it a lot more efficient. On top of that, we have less hard starts. It'd be a smoother start, smoother stop all the way around. So this machine right here has a 2400 volt cross line start, and we'd be taking down 42 days. I talked to the Vista said that they didn't think there'd be any transformer outside the building that they'd have to do any work to. They didn't talk about replacing it or moving it or anything, relocating it. Most all of the stuff that's on the inside have to be rewired from that big 2400 volt to 480. You got your switch gear, you got the hollow shaft motor that goes on your 700 cores. You'll have all of your transformer panels and the wiring for the building. We see that there's a breakdown of $28,000 for contractor mobilization, $300,000 for the motor, all the VFDs, panels, transformers. The building wiring is about $30,000. They left the main transformer for a Vista possible relocation open, but when I talked to Ian, he didn't see that. So that bill estimated cost for Snyder was $358,000. Sales tax was $28,000. Contingency for 15% contingency was $54,000. Total construction cost was $440,000. engineering and design was 40. Now, you might be able to cut some engineering and design money off of this, because really, if you're going to go out to bid, the specs and the bid work would be what we would ask for. The other stuff is pretty much straightforward that's in the house. It would make it very, very efficient, well, energy savings would go down. Now, they rounded it up, estimate up to $500,000, near $100,000. Avista does have a rebate program for this. The thing is they base it on 1 year's worth of run, actual run. Not idle sitting there waiting, actual run usage. And then they'll send you your check. They don't have that. They give you the formula for it. They take it off the calculation of the actual run on this program. So then you would get some money back on it. I don't know what that would be, but I can't imagine it would be just a small amount. But they know what their drugs quite a bit about. So those are the numbers that I have currently for that, to change that over on the top side to a VFD to make it energy efficient and save 60 money. Make it a solid start. The next item is a $300,000 grant item there, and that basically is waterline improvements and overlays. And that basically, that money there was put aside last year for the waterline replacement on 14th Avenue, 12-inch AC asbestos concrete pipe. So when 14th Avenue went through, the actual replacement of that pipe at that time was $277,000, $300,000 for that. To move that out the road and put it in a PVC pipe. Very important. It has several cut-ins right now on it. I believe there's maybe 5 cut-ins on that pipe currently from all the development out there. So it currently sets clear over just about in line on the west side of most of the fences that are laid directly on top of it down in Gemstone. It would eventually move out into a lane of travel to the water surface. So that's what that money was for last year that we set aside. So we're asking to pull it up here for that same project to redo that bottom line. It's 12-inch, and we keep it at 12-inch for part of those. Here you ask us to keep the 12-inch that connected to it, the 12-inch required to open the school.
Is everything up in that area 12-inch, or is there any 16 or?
12.
It's all 12 in that area.
Yeah, but the line that runs down Scooby Street extends to the east as well.
So with all of our projected growth, going out that way at 16 wouldn't be...
No, they didn't see. That was one thing we looked at, was whether we should upsize that pipe when we did this project, and they didn't see the need to upsize it to 16. If we would upsize it to 16 and saw a need for it, then we would split it amongst all the property owners as we went down. But we didn't see that need. True engineering. Okay?
No, Spencer, I see our water reserve fund is going to have a available balance of $1.4 million.
Yep.
So it's pretty easy to justify our Well 6 project and our water line improvements. So, yeah. When we set the rates for our water, sewer, and solid waste funds, we look at the capital needs of those funds out for the next 3 or 4 years, and that's what we use to set those rates. We're setting the rates with these kinds of projects in mind. And I
we'll still have a pretty healthy reserve budget. Yes. Once you fund these projects.
Yeah.
So we can take some of those seasonal workers out of that budget also, right?
If they're working on water projects. Yeah.
And I just noticed something on the red zone item list that I gave you. It says well number, or well 36. The 3 and the pound are the same key. I just didn't hit control soon enough, so it's not well 36. Yeah.
Terry, with all the
problems with the wells this year. I know it's hard to project, but was there any built into well maintenance or getting ahead of the situation instead of having the wells go down on us and then behind the situation all the time?
Well, I think one of the deals is the big piece. They make it a lot smoother to start up and ramp down. To project whether something will break down there, it's pretty hard. But we don't seem to have any issues. Those things just arose at that time. We do have $80,000 that we keep in there for well repair maintenance in the line items.
Did wells 3's problem smooth out after it runs for a while?
It smoothed out for a little bit. It came down quite a bit from where it was. It's still there, but they did a vibration analysis on it. They think it's actually in the connection to from the head to the pipe.
Well, I can guarantee it's going to save you money in electrical usage. You're running well 8. When you run well 8, you're running at full bore, and you got a clay valve that you're shutting against it. So if you put a VFD in it with a tube to where you could monitor the foot level in the well and operate that at a maximum with your VFD, you would not use any more energy than what was required to lift that amount of water that you're going to get instead of turning it on at 100% and running it against the dead valve.
You know, if you can turn it down, slow it up, and pump water instead of just pumping it down where you pump air, you can still pump water even though your level starts to drop. Right now, well, 9 comes on, full scope, sucks, and can't suck anymore. But right now, currently, it's set right at 25 and 41.
Our water fund spends about $470,000 bucks a year on electricity. I don't have the breaking down right here by well, but that's a lot,
literally,
because they're all across the line. They're all going 100%. With VFDs, it will adjust, and you'll be burning half.
We're only looking at going VFD on well 6 for this coming year.
Right now.
Getting rid of that 900 horse motor.
There's lots of ones here, and they're very, very old, and it rolls out on railroad track iron and stuff, you know, that you got to take water for us too. It's antique, it's electric, and it really needs to be brought to the future.
You got the old Frankenstein switch.
Yeah.
It's frightening when it turns off.
I wouldn't want to be in the room or outside of the building.
It's very scary.
So that's the water fund. We have the sewer fund has no red zone items.
Yeah.
The sewer fund, that's just where we're saving up the dollars for the new sewer treatment plant coming down in the future. And then in our solid waste fund, we have the $55,000 for the alley approach improvement.
And we've got three of those done this year too often. So we just set them over here.
What were they doing there, Terry? Were they doing
the out of the solid waste?
It's just from the solid waste, yeah.
And then up through by the new car wash?
Yeah.
No, that was for the
life
communication.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Hey, Spencer. Also, we had our Slack meeting on Wednesday. And they're more than likely are not going to raise rates this year.
Okay.
So they should be staying the same.
Okay. Good.
How many alley approaches are you doing? Quite a few of them with the First Street project?
When we did, yes, all of those are next. Every one of those are getting changed out.
It's not too late to take some of the money from our solid waste fund to fund that, because I know we were running $150,000 over what we thought for that project already, that we had to pay extra. Couldn't we use some of the current solid waste fund to help pay for that? To pay for those alley approaches?
The solid waste, yeah. Yeah, if it's the reason we can use the solid waste fund to pay for alley, that's normally a street thing, but if it's We're repairing wear and tear due to the dump trucks.
The first Avenue.
On First Avenue, where they're doing that right now.
Can we go back and say, for an extra $937,000?
Yeah.
Can we say that every yard was supposed to go?
There's at least, there's two in there. There was a third one, but it's $88,500.
Are those, that would help soften our general.
We find out.
The street going into, yeah, it would help soften our general fund budget too. Throw a little bit more. Do dump trucks use those roads? They get wear and tear from those? Yeah, then yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I know we should look into that, since you're so much.
Yeah.
They've got 2 hours.
With that, we just have one last section to look at, the parks area, and Molly. Oh, sorry. Apologize. Is that in the parks? Right. It's under here. Okay.
Okay, so we have a liner there for two lawnmower. We have a real mower. It's a fairly old mower. 1990. It's got 5,562 hours on it. The total industry says that that's equivalent to 428,274 miles. They said they commended us to having it run that efficient and that long for what we do with it. Now, we do grow our grass a little bit taller than we normally do. We do fertilize, we do throw the water to it, but we have to keep it just a little bit longer than basically I call the turf golf course style, really tight, because the traffic and the people that use the park have a tendency to beat it down pretty heavily. So we keep it just a little bit tall, and doing so, that mower has a 14-foot, the real mower has a 14-foot cut width to it, and the gangs that are down there, when you get behind it, it basically throws it out in a pretty good chunk and a pretty good slot. But you have to even get the mulcher with another mower. If you come right behind it, mulches. It's not made to cut that kind of grass. So basically, we've been running with, instead of three mowers, we've been running with two mowers, one trim mower around the trees and all the other obstacles in the park, and one John Deere mower, which only has 11-foot span, so we went from 14 to 11. The mower that we're proposing here has a cap on it. It's actually air conditioned, it's actually heat cap. We had some people last year that were pretty well heat exhausted out on this mower in the park. This mower here has a 16-foot cut width on it. It's a Toro, and it cuts fairly well, actually really well. We had a Toro, we got rid of it because when we had DOC running the mowers, they tore it up really bad and was beyond repair. But they mulch really well. They don't leave anything sitting on top of the ground. Right now, the John Deere mulches, but it doesn't mulch if. So these pumps that we've got out there, even with the blades of the sun. So to replace the 14-foot real mower, we could probably ask council if we can surplus it. Several different ways. We've had some golf course people ask us about it. But this 16-foot Toro vacuum mower will actually replace that Toro mower and go out to the park. That'll give us two full mowers to get across the acreage we need and get the parks put up. Much sooner than what we do right now. It does have the option of a broom, so you could run it in the wintertime, you could run it around City Hall with the broom off all your snow on the sidewalk instead of trying to plow it or trying to throw a lot of salt on this or shovel it by hand. So it has its uses there as well. So that's what we're proposing here for the $116,000.
Do you know how much that John Deere one costs?
Terry, if you had to prioritize between four seasonal employees and a lawnmower, what would you rather do?
He just beat me to it.
Well, you know, I guess I'm still going with what I got. You know, I have to take the seasonal workers. Because I think you're going to benefit down the road for the city all the way around. All the way around. But I get across that park a lot, that's a bigger machine, it's a bigger machine.
Yeah, you're talking about two different accounts. You're talking about funding for four seasonal individuals that are coming out of the street fund, which is going to be an offset. So you're talking about a capital expense for a lawnmower that's 116. I don't even think that the four seasonal people need to be, that doesn't need to be approved. I mean, that's in the budget. It's there.
Yeah, it also
just a switch over from one contract to another. You know,
it's whether he wants
with an additional 70,000, yeah.
Oh.
71,000, the 71, if he wants to fund that number 9 position or more.
Oh.
I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Well, if I was going
to. Then I heard it wrong.
Even the seasonal employee, too, because it's not 100% wash with the four seasonal ones. There's still additional costs that we do have to incur. It's not 100% wash.
It looks like a 131 to 126.
No, but we're adding the now this coming year we'd have to add one of our men. So that's where he took that money from. That's why it said it's not a wash.
You would have to add your man for the corrections people.
Yes.
Yeah. So now it's gonna be a wash once you add him. That's what I was getting to a little bit ago.
Right now, what we're paying for.
We would need that other person to take care of the one that just went to DOC to help them out.
It's different than what would be paying last year because there are additional costs that are coming down the road because they're changing their policies.
Exactly.
And having to pay those additional insurances and everything. So it's a wash to what we would have to pay DOC next year.
It's still two different departments.
It is.
Well, the two different departments, both those departments ultimately come out of the general fund, which the general fund is coming in really
high. But also the general fund, you could partially fund those seasonal workers with water and sewer partial. And streets, because the majority of the job will be in the parks, but they're going to get cross trained in the other thing. So you could split it up between the four.
I do probably talk to the police chief.
So I can really bring down to whether he wants the number 9 position for employee or a mower.
I'm going to be greedy.
Terry, now if you're going to have the four seasonal workers, can you do without that extra man? And get your mower? Yeah, but now you're going to have four guys that will probably be, you know, they'll probably be effective.
If I had a slack between adding that extra guy in my apartment and four seasonal,
where does that come from?
And let that one person ride like past year, so I'd bring that next year and ask for it.
Okay.
That's
what eventually we're going to have to start, I mean, waiting, and the mayor and I were talking about this a little bit with the grant. And the possibilities of, you know, having to build a mechanical sewer plant, and there's all these possibilities that we're looking at. They're coming in the future. We are going to have to start adding those additional employees to the Public Works Department to bring them up to the point where we can start departmentalizing them. So that you have water workers, and you have sewer workers, and you have street workers, and you have parks workers, so that we can staff a mechanical plant, and we can staff a water plant if we had to build one. You can staff, you know. So that's something we've got to really start looking at for the future.
Kirby, you know, Kirby, the toughest thing about down Public Works is you'd like to share as much knowledge of your 20, 25-year guys. You have your staff. And cross-training has always been a big issue, and currently, with the staff we have, you set that 8 staff members in there, and everybody disperses out across every problem, from light bulbs to heat in the rooms to water problems, whatever else is in the street, you can't stick, currently, you can't stick one guy with Dan, another guy, and give him 6 months with him so he can learn something. You stick him in there one day, you may end up pulling it the next day or halfway through that day because you need him over in the parking. And that's the situation with running with the minimal staff and the amount of acreage you have to cover, the miles of the streets you gotta cover, and everybody wants everything right now, and you gotta prioritize.
And that's what we were kind of talking about earlier when we said they're running around putting out fires. They're running from this job that has to be done to this job that has to be done to this job that has to be done, instead of being able to stay in their department and work on maintenance and possibly take care of something that needs to be done, but, you know, getting those things that always have to be done, done.
You're just saying there's certain things that you'd like as a director, you'd like to see get done a little bit better, but you can't do it if you don't have staff.
Well, there's times that I call for sidewalk inspection. He does very well. He comes right out. But, you know, there's times that, you know, there's things that need to get done, and it'll take a day or two. And that'll change, I think, if we get staffed right.
Because they don't have as long as you might have.
No.
Well, I was just thinking we could use Flint as a police car for Phil.
The train is four.
So the other part of this is all this discussion on skate park, Salter Meadow.
Am I there or to you?
Towards right here.
Okay. Project a little more. Okay, so Parks and Recreation this year has one capital request, and something that we've talked about with council a lot this year, last year, and years before this, but our goal is to finally bring the Dan Cooper Memorial Skate Park to fruition next spring. And with that, what this year when we went to bid, the insurance estimate for the skate park was for construction of $210,000. We received one bid back for $336,000. So, in an effort to hopefully receive more competitive bids, this council's decision to go back out to bid early spring of January 2016, when contractors are in need of work, like the Lockett family, they probably give us more competitive prices than they would have mid-year when they already, you know, when they have their job and they're doing it just to add something to the list or to, you know, occupy their employee time. So with that, the amount you see here that we're requesting for capital funding is $108,500. So we put together just a little formula, or I guess breakdown of where we got that number. So with our engineer's estimate of $210,000, it was estimated that we're going to need $100,000 additional dollars for construction costs. While we don't know exactly what that number is going to be, we can estimate given the bid that we received, that might be somewhere in the area of what we're going to need. So with that, our goal for construction costs would be $310,000. Currently, or in 2015, we spent $4,623. That left us with $305,377 that we needed to have for the state park. With that, we have $189,000 left in our budget, $189,377. We take that from our remaining goal amount, we have $116,000 left over. With that, you can subtract the money that we have in hand for the Tony Hawk Foundation grant that we received for $7,500, and that leaves us with $108,500 that we're requesting that the council approve to put towards the construction of the skate park in 2016. Any questions?
That $108,000 is going to come from the Park and Rec Reserve Fund. That's a fund where we've been saving up dollars for the skate park and for a community center slash farmer's market. We had $550,000 in there. We took $200,000 out for the skate park. And so this is the request for another just a little over $100,000, for the skate park, which leaves about $250,000 in that fund for the community center or farmer's market or whatever the council wants to do moving in the future.
We already do that because I'm hearing you already.
Vote on that already?
You already said $310,000.
Well, it hasn't been approved through the budget, so. Yeah, I thought we voted that we were going to use the money from the farmer's market to make up this difference and put off the farmer's market for a little bit. Isn't that what we voted and decided?
Eugene was adamant on that. He wanted it done, and we voted on it.
That's what we'll do then.
Well, just wait, you then.
Yeah, we're committed to get this
done. Get the skate park done, and then we're going to dig the hills in for the farmer's market thing.
With that, the way I see our next couple of council meetings going, November 2nd, we're going to divide the rest of the budget approval process into two different council meetings. On November 2nd, I see us looking at the water, sewer, solid waste funds, and then on November 9th, we can look at the general and the street funds and start saying yay, nay to different red zone items and move forward from there. So the night is really, it's over. If you want to have more conversation about some of your priorities for the future or some of the red zone items that you think are more important or less important than others, we can have that conversation now also, but I'll turn the time back over to you.
Okay. We've had 2.5 hours tonight. Is everybody ready to call it a night and pick it up again on next Monday? With that, then,
I am going to adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:33 p.m.
You didn't have a lucky night.
Jason, remember,